All right, lock it on down. It's a Thursday. It's the bottom of the 4 o'clock hour, and it's time to get our view from the north. At this juncture, I used to list various websites and TV shows. Now I can make it easy. He's doing his thing for The Athletic. If you like college, you got Ducks. If you like the NFL, you got Seahawks. On Twitter, you could still use the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, how's it going?
What is up, man? I am just pulling up CenturyLink.
Yeah, you're doing Broncos and Seahawks. Figured that all out by myself. So
very good.
Since we are the voice of the Seahawks here in Eugene, let's start there. Last week, we talked about the tight ends. Obviously, you got a terrific quarterback. I think the backup position is kind of intriguing. I know you and your partner at The Athletic been talking about it. If you had to do kind of a boxing-style tail of the tape, you know, Geno Smith versus Paxton Lynch, who do you think actually ends up second on the depth chart?
Well, I think both have sort of proven over the years to be mediocre NFL passers. You know, they're not very polished. They're not very consistent. But what we do know is that Geno has way more experience. I think 40 games under his belt compared to 5 or 6 for Lynch. And then Geno's got mobility. He can move. You know, he's not Russell Wilson level, but he can definitely move. And if you're Seattle, if Wilson goes down, heaven forbid, you want a guy in there who can sort of run your offense in terms of the mobility part of it, moving around the quarterback, et cetera. And that's one of the reasons why they traded for Brett Hundley last year, is they want to get a guy in there that could move a little bit. So I think that gives Geno the edge, the experience, and the mobility.
Wide receiver, obviously, a stud like Doug Baldwin is gone. Tyler Lockett is an obvious. They took DK Metcalf in round 2. But as far as the other guys, be it a 2, a 3, or deep depth chart, who are some of the other names fans should start getting familiar with?
I'm sorry, say the position again?
Wide receiver, sorry.
Oh, wide receiver. Yeah, you know, I think the only new guy really that's going to make it is going to be obviously Metcalf and then probably Jennings. Like, I think Malik Turner's had a nice camp. He's been around, so I think he has a chance. But I think Jennings, a 4th-round pick, and then, of course, Metcalf, a 2nd-round pick. I sort of think it's going to be those two along with Lockett, Brown, and David Moore. David Moore, I'm going to write about him for a feature for Monday. I got a kind of a thing for the guy. I think he's going to be pretty good. He's probably not going to beat out Metcalf because Metcalf is just a freak. But I think David Moore is going to be a pretty dynamic number 3 receiver for this team.
All righty. How about some offense as we continue with Aaron Fentress? We just talked offense, defense. I'm getting confused in my old age, Fentress. they were better than average at getting to the quarterback last season. They were tied for 11th, 43 sacks, yet they dealt Frank Clark to the Chiefs. So Jaron Reed returns as the top sack guy. I think he's the only one who had more than 3 last year. I know you also, well, actually, you've been covering the whole roster. Who are some of the guys up front that, you know, folks could look to maybe be pocket crashers?
Yeah, that's a dicey situation because Reed is out 6 games, suspended for the domestic violence issue. They're hoping that, you know, Ezekiel Ansah is the answer, the guy from Detroit who moved over, but he's got the shoulder injury, but I think he's going to start the first game. If he's not available, and again, I think he's going to be, and you lost Frank Clark and Reed's out, then you're screwed. I just think the pass rush will just be so challenged. I think it's going to be challenged anyway, especially the first 6 weeks without Reed. But, you know, I mean, they hope Griffin can be a legitimate pass rusher off the edge. But that's up in the air. Mingo is a guy who's returning. He's got some pass rushing ability. But again, is he really going to give you all that much? If they don't get somebody on offense and get Reed back, they're in trouble.
The linebacking core, of course, has been elite. I mean, you know, you think during this whole Schneider-Carroll era, they paid Bobby Wagner. KJ Wright is off an injury. Michael Kendricks, he's facing the SEC, and I don't mean the good football conference trouble. But, you know, what's the status? I mean, who else is in the mix? I mean, are they a little thin at linebacker?
Actually, I think they're going to be okay there. They're starting a three-day line, obviously. And then you got Shaquille, you got Calitro, you got Mingo. These are all guys who played a lot with Calitro and Mingo. Mingo started a lot of games, actually. So I think they feel pretty good about their linebacker depth. Pete Carroll has said he thinks this is the best three starting linebackers they've ever had. They feel like the backups are good. They got Martin, the rookie out of Utah, who they drafted relatively early. So I think they feel pretty decent about their depth at linebacker behind the big three.
Yeah, and they also drafted, what was his name, Ben Burkhirvin. So I guess they do have options.
So much so that he might be a practice squad guy.
Let's get to the Ducks. While things have stabilized, they got a head coach now entering a second year. The departure of Jim Leavitt, they hired Andy Avalos, so a new coordinator. What are you getting as far as what might be different schematically, and in particular, what it means for the big guys up front and who we might look to have big seasons?
Yeah, so they put in some 4-3 elements during the spring. They want to be multiple. Avalos has talked about that. They want to be able to do a lot of different things. And so that meant adding some 4-3 schemes. And that has got guys like Austin and Jordan excited as heck, man. Those guys, like, when I talked to Austin, especially at Media Day, he was talking about he's going to play some 3 technique now instead of playing a 3-4 defensive end. You got 2 gap, and basically you're there to absorb blockers so the linebackers can make plays. As a 3 technique, you can mess with that guard. You can do all sorts of things with him. You can shoot gaps and make plays, get in the backfield more often. So much so that he says he's going to get 15 sacks.
Okay.
So, I mean, why would a young man ever, you know, be a little overzealous about something? You know, that's sort of what you get from guys like that. But that would be an Oregon record. The great DeForest Buckner had 10.5. And I was named Pac-12 player, the defensive player of the year. 15 might be a reach, but, you know, he's definitely going to improve. I think he had 2 last year. And then you got Jordan Scott, who'll play with 1 technique. Again, he can sort of mess with the center. And the thing is, if you double team one, the other one's going to have him on one, and tackle can't really help him with 3 technique that much because you got someone coming off the edge, which could be Kayvon, Cumberlander. So it's going to be interesting to see how that all works. Now, they tried this in 2016 with Brady Hoke, right? They went to the 4-3, but they really had 3-4 personnel, so it was a disaster. Now they have legit 3-4 personnel and guys who are versatile enough to have legit 4-3 personnel as well, because they have some big defensive ends, something they didn't have a lot of in 2016. And, of course, in 2016, we all remember the defensive tackles were just a mess. This time with Jordan and Austin, you have legit D tackles, and they have decent backups as well. So we all see some 4-3. We'll see how it works out.
I'm marking down Feliu 15 sacks. I think that would break the record by 2.
Yeah, exactly. Kayvon, who came in with listening to the 3-4 guy, he's going to play more of the stud, which is where their flex defensive end, their edge guys are like the drop in back of the old system. And he's going to get 10 sacks. So they're about to sack everybody like 6 or 7 times this year.
One last thought. Brendan Schooler got hurt. Looks like he could miss 2 months, and that's a unit.
Yeah.
That's a unit that lost Dylan Mitchell. I mean, Schooler had 21 catches, but as far as that receiving core, how much of a blow do you think this is, and how well suited are they to go without him for a sustained period?
You know, it's interesting. I think a lot of people believe that you kind of want to be in a situation where some of the young guys like Michael Pittman are going to come in and beat out a Schooler or Giant Johnson III. Obviously, Jalen Redd's going to start. Juwan Johnson's going to start. So I think some people believe we've seen what Schooler can be. Let's move on from that. But I'm of the mind that, you know, the guy played receiver 2 years. He was a DB freshman year. that this senior year, with his advancement and knowledge and understanding of the position, and the guy is athletic. Built, there's no reason to believe he can't be much better than he was last year, and by all accounts, he had a good spring. So I think regardless, losing a senior with experience who reportedly has gotten better is going to hurt him. And I know everyone's excited about Michael Pittman, but he's going to be a true freshman. Name for me the last true freshman had a huge impact on receiver. I'll wait.
Josh Huff. I mean, Josh Huff.
Josh Huff was pretty good, but you know he wasn't 800 yards good. Was he like 400 or 500 yards? You know, so to me, if Pittman can come in and give you Josh Huff-like production, you still want to have a senior in the field along with Juwan Johnson, even if it's your fourth guy, to give you some production, much like they had that year in 2010 as well with the Ducks. So I think losing Schooler can hurt because you're relying on a bunch of young guys. And I will say this too, he's going to miss 6 or 7 regular season games. Maybe he redshirts and come back for a fifth year. He can still redshirt. You can also, he misses those first 6, you can bring him back and sort of see where he fits in and see how he is. Playing 4 is still redshirt. And so we'll see how that works out. But if you have him, I think about redshirt and come back to the 5th year and get that extra free year of education.
All right. Well thought out there. Good, strong finish there, Mr. Fentress. He's going to be at Denver-Seattle tonight for The Athletic now. You can catch him on Twitter at Aaron J. Fentress. Appreciate you checking in. Enjoy the game tonight, and we'll catch up next week.
And if you're looking for a reason to watch, you got Justin Holland for Denver against Ugo Amadi for the Seahawks. A couple young former Ducks.
Good tidbit. Right. An even stronger finish.
Yeah, and Royce Freeman should play tonight, maybe.
Yeah, I think he is. All right, man. Travel safe. Okay. Talk soon.